It is Wednesday, February 20th, 2019. Welcome back to another episode of the MMA Reporters. And when you do shows like this one, when you do shows like the one I do on Monday, when you do shows like Arion the Bad Guy, it's always fun when news breaks right before you do the show. Doesn't happen often, but when it does, when there's fresh news out there, new news, if you will, that's always very exciting. And that's what happened this morning. So we found out at around 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time, UFC sent out a press release that George Rush St. Pierre, arguably the greatest mixed martial arts fighter of all time, the pride of Saint-Isidore, Quebec, Canada, the face of Canadian MMA, the former UFC welterweight and middleweight champion, was set to hold a press conference tomorrow in Montreal, Thursday morning in Montreal, to make a special quote-unquote announcement. Moments later, Benoit Baudouin of LDS in Quebec, a sister station of ESPN, by the way, the French-Canadian version of ESPN in Quebec, announced that George was expected to announce his retirement. I have confirmed via multiple sources that that is in fact true. George St. Pierre tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time will announce his retirement from mixed martial arts. According to my sources, he tried to secure a fight against Khabib Nurmagomedov. Once it became clear that that was not going to happen, that it would not materialize, he decided at 37 years young that it was time to walk away. Of course, the last time we saw him in action was November of 2017, UFC 217, when he defeated Michael Bisping. And you'll recall, he stayed a beat longer in the cage that night to say goodbye to the fans, to acknowledge the fans. In the end, that ended up being his final moments as an active UFC fighter inside the cage. So we have a lot to talk about here this afternoon. It is a pleasure once again to be joined by the man in the shirt, Jeff Wagenheim, the great Jeff Wagenheim. And also returning is the one and only Greg Rosenstein. And this is very fun, guys, because this is sort of like the heartbeat of ESPN.com/MMA. You two gentlemen kind of set the table for everyone. So first off, Jeff, welcome back.
Good to talk to you, Ariel. It's an emotional day.
It is emotional.
George St. Pierre. It's like it's the end of an era.
I will share my emotions in a moment, but let's just say hello to Greg as well. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing great. Hopefully, no more news breaks because this is the entire section right here. So
yeah, that's right.
We have to run back.
I was going to add when you said it's really cool when news breaks before one of these shows. It always seems to happen that news breaks as soon as you finish.
That's right.
So that's like we're playing with house money here.
So I want to talk to you guys about what just came out, this news that just broke. I just want to set the table first from my perspective. No secret that I am from Montreal. No secret that George St. Pierre, growing up along with David Loiseau, were my favorite fighters before I started doing this for a living. I've said on many occasions that UFC 65, when he beat Matt Hughes to finally become the welterweight champion, is my favorite fight of all time. I went to Champs Sports Bar on Saint Laurent Street in Montreal with some friends who knew nothing about MMA, and I tried to convert them into MMA fans. We watched it. The place exploded like the Canadians had just won the Stanley Cup. George St. Pierre means a lot to me. I'm a human being. I can't hide that. And it has been an honor to cover his career. So to your point, Jeff, I am a little emotional. I think a lot of us thought that this could happen, but to actually see it become a reality and I hope to be there tomorrow at the press conference. Thank you to ESPN for giving me that opportunity. It's an end of an era, and it's not often that arguably the greatest ever walks away, and so this gives us some time to reflect. And so let me ask you, when you heard about the news, what did you think?
I thought good for him. That's what I thought. I know that you mentioned that Khabib fight was sort of hanging out there, and it would have been great to see something like that, but I really thought good for George. I mean, this is a guy who walked away from the sport when he was on top, and how many people do that? It's a pretty rare thing in combat sports, really in sports in general, but in combat sports in particular. And then he made the decision to come back when he fought against Bisping. And how many times has someone who walked away come back and then they get exposed, their return? We just saw it last weekend. Cain Velasquez comes back from a long absence and seconds later he's on the canvas and that's over. Well, George came back and became a champion in a whole different weight class. So it's almost like he's had so many triumphs or even triumphant returns. And, you know, now he's walking away as a guy who was a two-time champion, perhaps the greatest ever. I'm going to say he's the greatest ever. Good for him.
I agree with that completely. I think, like you said, there's too many of these fighters who are all-time greats, and then they keep going and keep going, and then it gets almost sad. You know, a couple months ago when we saw BJ Penn, that was kind of sad. You know, this past weekend, Hannon Buraya, that was kind of sad. So I think it's great when these fighters know when they don't want to keep going. And, you know, he said on Ariel, I think your show a couple months ago, whenever it was on, that fire really isn't there anymore. So if he's not getting the fights that he wants, he shouldn't just be forced into a fight just for the sake of it. He doesn't need the money. He's an all-time great. No matter where you have him, I know Jeff, you said he's number one for you. I think a lot of people have him number one. I think he's definitely a top five all time. So I think it's the right time if he's not really feeling that fire.
Okay, so let me ask you guys this before we dig deeper into George and his legacy and perhaps why he's walking away. Jeff, you've been covering the fight game a long time, and Greg, you just alluded to this. The fight game is filled with stories of people who announce their retirement and then come back. Even Daniel Cormier said, oh, I'm going to retire when I turn 40 in March, and that has been pushed back. We know about Roy Jones Jr. talking for years, I'm going to retire when I'm X years old, comes back. Bernard Hopkins and the same. BJ Penn, I mean, it's very rare that someone stays true to this. I think of a Lennox Lewis who stayed true to it, said, I'm done, and never came back, even though people tried to get him to come back. In short, do you believe, George? Do you really believe that this is it for him?
Oh, yeah, totally. I feel as though when he walked away after the Johnny Hendricks fight years ago, and he never used the R word, he never said retirement, I think that said something about how he wasn't quite ready to truly walk away, but he just couldn't continue at that time. And you know, if you remember the time, he was kind of emotionally a mess. He was having a hard time in his fights. He was also getting beat up in his fights, even though he was continuing to win, and he needed to be away from the sport. He might have never come back, but he wasn't ready at the time to say he was done. I think this time he's ready. And again, he has been a champion in two different weight classes. I know he wanted to get that fight with Khabib, which I guess if he had to cut down to 155 pounds and become a champion in a third weight class, it would have been crazy. But is that what the guy really, I mean, I suppose for him, if the one more accomplishment would have been a great thing for him, but I think he seems like a guy who knows what he's done in the sport, and he knows when it's time to walk away. So this is it.
I do believe him that he is feeling this way, and retirement could very well be exactly what he's going to be in forever. I do think, though, that, you know, he just said he wanted to fight Khabib, and so it's not completely gone. You know what I mean? And for the right money, for the right person, anybody could come out of retirement. So I'm not going to give it 100% lock rate. I don't know about you. I mean, you're a lot closer than I am with him. What do you sense?
I find the timing interesting because, as you just said, so much can happen between now and when Khabib is ready to return, right? Khabib has said that he's only going to come back in November once his teammate suspension are up, and we're in February, so that's in 9 months. A lot can happen. Even if he did come back in November and won, a lot can happen between that fight and his next fight. So I'm really curious. George hasn't talked on the record yet, but I'm curious to hear his explanation. It is important to note he's 37, and I think that the UFC was a little upset that he came back to fight Michael Bisping and then didn't defend the title, because that's what happened in the Johnny Hendricks fight. He dropped the belt, and you'll recall Dana White saying that there was a clause that he had to defend it against Robert Whittaker. That didn't happen, so he gave up the title like 11 days later, I think it was. So I thought it was a very, very, very long shot that they would give him a third title fight in the third different weight class, because I don't think George is ready and willing to be an active champion, meaning I think he wants legacy fights. He wants big fights. The idea of being the first man to defeat Khabib Nurmagomedov is incredibly intriguing for him. I don't think he is interested in being a guy who's going to defend the lightweight, welterweight, or middleweight title, you know, actively, right? And so the UFC is going to say, nah, we're not going to give you this. Massive fight, but I'm not surprised that they're saying no, and I'm not surprised that he has the feeling that, you know what, I'm never going to get this fight because of how the last two title reigns went.
Well, you could totally understand the UFC's way of thinking. I mean, nobody has ever gone to a different weight class, won a title, and then not defended it, Conor McGregor. But, look, George is a guy who has – he walks his own path. He's a guy who at times has challenged the company with regards to drug testing. Really, he was – the first prominent guy who was out there calling for more, for more stringent testing. Now, some of that hasn't really worked out so well for the sport in general. But he was the guy that was out there, and he was challenging the UFC specifically about that. So I can understand them not wanting to do him any favors, even though he certainly made him a lot of money. And if they put him in another big fight, he would have made even more money for him.
Are you surprised the UFC isn't interested in this fight, Greg?
Interested in Khabib and GSP? Yeah, a little bit, because it's two huge, huge names. I mean, they're all about selling tickets. They're all about selling pay-per-views. I mean, that would crush, right? I mean, those are two amazing fighters. So I am a little surprised they're not interested. I mean, we don't know all the details and why that didn't come together, but I am a little surprised.
Well, Dana White has been asked about this multiple times. He's like, no, I'm not going to give him that fight. That's not something we're interested in, because I think he was legitimately mad. And so I do agree with you, Jeff. I understand their line of thinking, and quite frankly, I think it would be hypocritical on our part, especially you and I, Jeff, who have talked about like meritocracies and things like that.
Right.
There is a logjam at 155. It would be hard to tell Tony Ferguson, for example, hey, we're giving this guy who's never fought at 155 a title shot over you or Dustin Poirier or Ali. I mean, I 100%, I'm not going to knock the UFC for this. I 100%. But to your point, Greg, this is a money fight. Like, this fight does way better than Ferguson. The only fight that probably does better than this one for Khabib is a Conor rematch. And I think there's, for me, like, stylistically, GSP versus Khabib is freaking incredible, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Way more interesting for me than a Conor rematch, because
I agree.
You know, unless Conor suddenly learns way more wrestling, and again, I'm not going to discredit McGregor because he did better on the ground than a lot of people have done against Khabib, but unless he can raise that significantly, I don't see a fight with Khabib changing, the result changing much at all. George St. Pierre has been always touted as sort of one of the greatest MMA wrestlers, a guy with no actual wrestling credentials in his pocket, but a guy who's always been able to out-wrestle everybody he's fought against. And, you know, even though he would have to cut down to 155, he would be a bigger man than Khabib. So, certainly there would have been some interesting things. And you're right, though. It would not be right for him to step ahead of the line. I just don't think that's the reason why the UFC is saying no to the fight. I mean, the idea that, Dana White would say, I'm not going to give him this fight, as if he's giving him something. What he's doing is he's trying to make fights that make money. So there's other reasons
but
there.
Were you at that press conference? Were you at UFC 167 when he fought Johnny Hendricks?
I was not at that one.
You've seen the press conference.
Yeah.
You remember how contentious it was?
Ever since
then, it's never been the same between the two. Do you remember the press conference? I think it was before the Kevin Lee-Tony Ferguson fight in Las Vegas. So that was what, UFC 216, if memory serves me correct? And they did the press conference for GSP Bisping. And Dana walked up there, and everyone's like, so, what was your reaction when you found out that George was coming back? And he said, awesome. Like, there was no excitement. He didn't build that fight. It always felt like he was just not that buzzed about the fact that arguably the greatest of all time was coming back. Ever since that press conference, he said, he owes it to us. He should defend the title. That's what you do. Johnny Hendricks was so close to winning that fight, they wouldn't have had that problem. And ever since that moment, it felt like they could not see eye to eye. And then GSP comes out and starts talking about drug testing and the union thing. Remember that?
Right.
He was on the forefront of all that ever since then. So I think all of that comes into play when you try to figure out why they're not interested in this Khabib fight.
Right. I'm actually curious about another possibility. Say Tyron Woodley, who always wants to fight GSP, say Woodley wins another 3 fights in a row or something. Do you think it's possible that because he just continues to rise, that could be something that for the right money and everything GSP would consider coming back for? Or is he still not enough of a draw? Say he wins like 3 or 4 more in a row.
It's a good question, and I think all of us would sign up for that fight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he has any interest in that fight because that's a mountain that he conquered. He's considered the greatest welterweight champion of all time. And let's say by the time that actually happens where Tyron is threatening his record, George is going to be like probably close to 40 at that point.
Right.
And George St. Pierre isn't the kind of guy, I think, who's going to sit on his couch now and, you know, eat a lot of poutine or something like that. I mean, he is going to be in great shape for his entire life. I don't suspect that he will, like, you know, balloon in his 40s and 50s. That being said, he's talked about this so many times. The stock market, you know, who's up, who's down, what's my legacy, all this. I think for him, welterweight is done. Like, every time you ask him about welterweight in the past, like, he doesn't even entertain the idea. 185 was of interest because he had never done it. Double champ. 155 would be of interest because he never done it. Triple champ, Khabib, undefeated. In his mind, what I've gathered is there's no mountain there as far as Woodley is concerned. So to answer your question, no, I don't. Yeah. I would love to see the fight.
It's too bad. I mean, Dana's two favorite people, really.
I know.
Yeah, that is true, too.
He just wouldn't put the belt on anyone in that case. Yeah. So that's going to happen tomorrow. And so this gives us an opportunity to celebrate George. And I just mentioned the story. So, like, for me, very quickly, being an MMA fan and seeing someone who's from Montreal rise up and become that big of a star, again, him and David Loiseau. David Loiseau went to a college that was literally 10 minutes from, you know, where my family lived when I was in high school. That was just, you know, that sort of thing didn't happen. Like, in hockey, there were Montreal-born stars, but in other sports, there weren't. And so that was super cool for us, and that's why GSP was always our guy. And the first time I ever interviewed George St. Pierre was July of 2008 when I was working for a website called MMArated.com, and I went to TriStar, and I was nervous as hell. And he sat on the ring. I'll never forget it. The clip is still on YouTube. He sat on the ring, and he spoke to me like we were, I mean, like best buds. And I just couldn't believe how one of the biggest stars in the sport was that down to earth. When I was running my own website, jerrypark.com, I somehow got his number and cold called him. At that point, I had never done any video work or anything and asked him to be on the show. And I said I was from Montreal and everything. Did the interview right then and there for me. So I think part of his legacy is that he was always kind of, you know, humble, down to earth, respectful, martial arts, comes from the true martial arts background. But Jeff, I understand. I've never been to Saint-Isidore. You've been to his hometown?
Yeah, I was coming up to Montreal to watch him fight. I believe it was the Nick Diaz fight.
Okay,
and I was driving up from Massachusetts through Vermont with my wife, and I said, you know, we have to take a little detour when we're on the way to Montreal, and you know, I found Saint-Isidore on the map, and I went over there, and I was expecting there to be, you know, like in some little town, you'd see like banners across the roadway, you know. Big night for George or whatever. I was expecting there to be major celebrations, but it was very quiet. There was nothing at all in the town in there. And then we stopped at a little convenience store, and I was asking the person behind the counter. Now, everybody, of course, is this is in deepest Quebec, so there's hardly anybody. Half the people I would speak to could not speak to me in English. They were just, they were French speaking.
And you don't speak French, Jeff?
I'm poor. But I was able to at least express that I was, you know, there to ask about George St. Pierre. And some people knew who he was. Some people didn't even know. It was kind of very low key. I was kind of surprised. And then I later found out that his schooling was in a neighboring town. So even though he was from one town, where he actually went to school and where he was kind of a little better known was in another town. So I feel like I had gone to the wrong place, but it was still kind of cool to go into the place where this guy was. It was like a little, tiny little town out in the middle of, farmland.
Yep.
There was, you know, nothing much out there. It was a cool little thing. And then to get in the car and hop in the car and go up, you know, not very long, 45 minutes or so, maybe an hour up to Montreal where, you know, the place was just celebrating him. It was kind of a cool experience.
Yeah. Were you there at UFC 83 when you fought Matt Serra?
I was not at that one, no.
Were you at 129? The one at Rogers Center?
No, I was not there either.
Okay.
I only went to – the only fights I saw George fight in Montreal a bunch of times. The Nick Diaz, I think the Carlos Condit.
Yeah.
And then maybe I saw him in I'm not sure. There were some other ones as well, but I did not see Toronto and – so forth. The first time I saw George St. Pierre fight, I was trying to figure this out when I saw this news this morning, and I realized I don't even remember it, but I remember I looked at his record, and his UFC debut was UFC 46,
mm-hmm.
and the reason I know I saw him fight was that was a fight headlined by two title fights, two very distinctive ones. Vitor Belfort knocked out Randy Couture to become the light heavyweight champion in less than a minute, and right below that was the welterweight championship of the world. Matt Hughes defending against BJ Penn, the former, at that time, former lightweight champion, and BJ Penn upset him to become the champion. Now, George St. Pierre fought on the main fight of the prelims and won a unanimous decision that, to be honest with you, I don't even remember. All I remember is I know I saw it because I watched that entire fight card. There were five UFC welterweight champions on that fight card. You had Matt Hughes, you had BJ Penn, you had George St. Pierre, Carlos Newton was on that fight card, and also I believe Matt Serra was on the fight card. I'm trying to think. I took a note here. I think it was, yeah, Matt Serra fought as well. I mean, it was a pretty crazy fight card. Frank Mir fought. There was a, if you go back and look at that, you know, that was a pretty notable thing, but there it was. I mean, I don't remember the GSP performance at all. All I know is that two fights later, he was challenging Matt Hughes for the title. He lost that fight, and then, of course, a couple years later, came back and won it, but I did see his debut. Of course, I, you know, probably today I'll go home and rewatch it on the Fight Pass. But it was you know, notable debut.
Greg, where does he stand in your greatest of all time list? Is he number one? Are you a John Jones guy? An Anderson Silva guy?
I gotta figure it out exactly where. I do have John Jones as number one. I just think overall he's basically dominated everyone he's ever faced, and the one loss should not have been a loss. I mean, he literally bloodied the guy's entire face up before.
What about the black clouds?
Well, that's the question. And Jeff and I were talking about this earlier, where GSP lands. You know, to me, John Jones is the best all time, but then he has, you know, the issues overall. So, I mean, and the same thing with Anderson. You never know for sure on that either. So, you know, when we were talking about best ever, you know, you could go Fedor, you could go Anderson, John Jones, GSP. I guess you can make the case for Demetrius based on everything he did. So, I mean, it's kind of tough to figure out exactly who is one through five on this list here. But yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say too about GSP, which is just, you knew the guy did the things the right way. There's no issues outside of the octagon with this guy. You know, he wasn't a big trash talker. And I think that's something you got to respect with him.
I want to ask Jeff where he stands in your greatest of all time list. But, you know, it's funny because George is retiring. And usually when you retire, you get a little older. That means you lose some hair. And George doesn't have a lot of hair. But that's, I think, his own choice. He does the old Helwani. You know, he cuts it short, keeps it high and tight. But I think if he wanted to, he could let it grow. If he did have trouble letting it grow, he should call our friends over at Hit the Music, Daniel. Keeps.com. There it is. Danny, I think we woke him up. There it is. There's that song. I need the song. You know, it gets me excited. Guys, as you know, and Greg doesn't have this problem because he's like 14 years old, but Jeff, you and I can sympathize. Losing hair sucks, right?
It's starting to go.
Guys, I don't know if you know this, but 2 out of 3 guys will experience hair loss by the time they're 35. 35! So you got 20 more years, Greg. You're good. Introducing Keeps, the easiest and most affordable way to keep the hair you have. These FDA-approved products used to cost so much, but now, no. Thanks to Keeps, they're finally inexpensive and easy to get. For 5 minutes down, starting at just $10 a month, you'll never have to worry about that hair loss again. Getting started with Keeps is so easy. Sign up takes just less than 5 minutes. Answer a few questions, snap some photos, and voila! A licensed physician will review your information online and recommend the right treatment for you. Then, it is shipped right to your door every 3 months. That's it. Keeps offers generic versions of the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products out there. Some of you have already probably tried them, I'm guessing, but you've probably never gotten them for this price. This is a special for all of the listeners of this great program. Keeps is only $10 to $35 a month. Plus, now you can get your first month for free. One hell of a deal for getting to keep. Get it? Keep?
Yeah, keep.
My or your hair. Okay, now, here's what you have to do. To receive your first month of treatment for free, go to keeps.com/MMA. That's keeps.com/MMA. Keeps is KEEPS.com/MMA. That's a free month of treatment at keeps.com/MMA. Keeps, hair today, hair tomorrow. Support them because they support us. Jeff?
I like it.
Is he the greatest of all time?
I think he is, but, you know, I think you can certainly make strong arguments for all those other guys. You know, John Jones has certainly been the most dominant guy, but then you go back and you see Anderson Silva. And then, you know, certainly Fedor get some people excited. I would say those are those three and George are the big ones. Those are the four easy arguments for any one of those guys. You also, I mean, I guess Demetrius is another one, but I'm just going to leave it with those four. And so the way I'm going to arrive at George being number one is by process of elimination. We can cite all of their greatness, each one of those guys, George, John, Anderson, Fedor. Make a list. You'll see a lot of greatness right down that list. But now let's eliminate some stuff. John Jones, PED drug test failures. Anderson Silva, PED drug test failures. Let's push them to the side. Fedor Emelianenko, it's a little bit sketchier with him, but the fact that he never fought in the UFC, I think, is a mark against him. I do recognize it that at the time he was coming up in the sport, the Pride Fighting Championship had tremendous some tremendous heavyweights. But, you know, unfortunately for him, the UFC is and has been the major league of mixed martial arts for a long time. And unless you fight in the majors, if you don't compete in that league, you're always going to have some people questioning how great you are. And so I'm just going to sort of push him aside as well. George doesn't have very many negatives. I mean, it took him two times to get to the title, but the second time he fought Matt Hughes, he took him out in a really beautiful way. Then he has his big, failure against Matt Serra, but he comes back and smashes him. Then he goes on and even what 9 title defenses. Then when he walks away, he comes back what 2.5 years later was it to take out Bisping. I mean, again, you can make arguments for all those guys, but I think that when you add up the positives and then also take away the negatives, I think you end up with George St. Pierre.
I agree with you. I think the fact that he avenged his only 2 losses helps. I think the fact that he has no asterisks helps. I think the fact that he walked away twice as champion helps. To me, it's kind of a, I don't know, it's a bit of a no-brainer. If you want to say, all right, John has never lost, fine. But it's hard to overlook that other stuff, right? I mean, I'm not talking about the Matt Hamill fight. I'm talking about the second DC fight and UFC 200. It probably comes down, but you know what? I wouldn't hate you if you say it comes down to DC, GSP, or Demetrius. Although Demetrius lost to Henry Cejudo, so I think he kind of gets excluded.
And DC's lost to Jones twice. I mean,
right.
Once not officially, but I mean, you could certainly make all those arguments. Any one of those people.
I don't mean clean in terms of PEDs, like the cleanest argument is George's, right?
Absolutely. There's no question. And, you know, this probably shouldn't count, but I would be hypocritical if I didn't acknowledge that it at least counts a little bit for me. George has just been a gentleman of the game. And there's something about that.
Should that factor in, though?
It probably shouldn't factor in, but there's something about watching a guy who's gone about things the right way all the way through his career. And, you know, Johnny Bones is, I've had great interactions with John over the course of the years. Anderson Silva as well. You know, I haven't actually had the opportunity to interview Fedor ever, but certainly I've understood he's always been a gentleman as well. But George, there's some intangible thing about George that I think just makes him special.
I agree, but we're also watching cage fighting where people are punching each other in the face, so I don't think being a gentleman matters as much. But yes, I agree. The cleanest.
Don't make me come over there, Greg.
I know you've trained a couple times, so I'm a little worried over here.
Not really.
But I agree. I mean, it's hard to put what, say, Jones did past your mind. I mean, it's just difficult. And that's how I feel about DC, too. I think you can make the case for DC potentially, but I just can't get those 2 Jones fights out of my head. No matter what he was potentially on, you know, it was pretty decisive wins there. So it's hard to do that.
I like what you're saying about him being a nice guy, but this is like an old school media thing that the baseball writers always get
you're
crap
right.
for, right?
You're right.
About who they vote into the Hall of Fame.
You're right. All the people who hated Roger Clemens
yeah,
and hated Barry Bonds. Yeah, I mean, I'm acknowledging that that's in my mind, but I do have to sort of push it aside when I'm thinking about which one of these. Because, like I said, all these guys, I've had good interactions with all these guys, other than having not really had much to do with Fedor. But certainly, I've seen him, you know, interviewed and seen him around enough to know that he's also done things the right way. So yeah, I mean, I'm acknowledging it, but I'm also saying that I really think it's really about other stuff.
And we also have Artem Lobov. about to fight in bare knuckle.
That's right. Don't do this, Greg.
Why would he do that?
Come on.
I mean, we're trying to have a serious conversation here, and you throw out Artem Lobov. With all due respect to the, you know.
That's 2 minutes for roughing.
Yeah. Okay, well, let me ask you this, because I think it is interesting. If George St. Pierre's career started a year ago, right, and it ends up the same, 26-2, same victories, same type of opponents, is he as popular and as successful as he was when his career started back in 2004? Because I don't know if George St. Pierre, with his demeanor, his personality, and honestly, his fighting style gets over the way the fans of today, you know, are attracted to MMA fighters. Look at today's UFC. It's completely different than the UFC where he reigned. What do you think, Greg? Does GSP have the same success? Because we know this game is all about getting the fights, right? You got to get the fights. You got to get over with the crowd. Does he have the same success?
You're talking about star power?
Star power, getting put in title fights, getting opportunities to shine, all those things. I don't know. Like, Tony Ferguson 15 years ago isn't having as much trouble getting a title fight on, you know, a 10, 11, 12 fight winning streak. It's just a different game, right? Mm-hmm. It was much more of a meritocracy. There were less weight classes. Just a different game. And I'm wondering if a guy who doesn't talk trash, who isn't flashy outside of the cage, I mean, he was known for being, you know, one of the first to wear suits to press conferences, and I think that raised some eyebrows. Wow, he's taking it seriously. He's a professional. But I just wonder if George St. Pierre gets the same kind of love in today's UFC.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, in terms of actually getting those fights, I think it would be more difficult because Dana would look at him and say, oh, what does he really do that surpasses just success in the cage? You know, he needs to have some of the other things that a Conor has, for instance. I do think, though, nowadays with, not to pat our own backs, but just with ESPN backing it now and the sport on the rise, more fans are getting into it. I think his star power could be technically bigger now than ever before. You know, it was a young sport back then when he was really thriving. And now, you know, with all the extra different types of forms of media out there, it could push him to that level that he wasn't before.
Yeah, maybe. But we are in the entertainment era. And as much as I kind of hate that in some ways, I recognize that that's where we're at. And George had fights that were pretty entertaining, but then he also had some that some people would not look at that way. And, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, you brought up our employers, and certainly there's more people, just because of so many people watch ESPN, there are more people who are going to be exposed to UFC who never would have given it the time of day before. And so I would characterize those folks as more casual fans. And if you're a casual fan and you are not as steeped in some of the intricacies of the sport, you may not know what's really going on when GSP takes a guy down and then slowly works his way out of full guard into half guard and then finds a way to work his way into side control and finds his way to do all these different things. And, you know, I just recently went to a fight down in the Mohegan Sun, the Bellator ones, and I was kind of like surprised because it had been a while since I've been in one of those fights where I was really listening to the fans, and there were a lot of people just want to see people bang. They just want to see, you know, that Brian Barberina fight against Vicente Luque. That's what they want to see. And there's nothing wrong with that. Those fights are awesome. But to see somebody do things in a kind of a technical, methodical way, the way George would take apart his opponents, I think it would have been a harder sell in this era.
I agree with you, but do you really think it's that much different? I bet you back years ago, people still wanted them to go and bang. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I remember they would boo him. I remember UFC 129, the fight against Jake Shields, 55,000 plus. Like, it kind of ended on a bit of a weird note. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He hurt his eye in that fight. No, Jake hurt his eye in that fight. Did Jake or GSP hurt his eye? One of them hurt their eye. It's been a while. But anyway, the point was, the crowd was like restless by the end,
yeah.
You know? And there were some fights where the crowd was, you know, kind of saying like, come on, George, go for the kill. There was the Dan Hardy fight where he went for the submission and he couldn't get the submission, and the fans were a little bit, you know, annoyed about that. But I think the consensus seemed to be after the Matt Serra knockout that he started to play it safe, that it changed the way he was. He didn't go for the kill as much. And that could very well be true. And he's talked about that in the past. So I don't think it's a crazy thing to say that maybe he's not as popular in today's UFC, just given the way the fans are. And also, I think personality plays a lot into it. Like, he never talked trash. Remember when he walked into the cage and went up to Matt Hughes and said, I'm not impressed?
I am not impressed by your performance.
Exactly. Good job on that one.
Was that good?
That was like such a big thing because that was like the most trash talky. And he came out later and said like he was kind of, his English wasn't good and he didn't mean to be that rude. Right. But he literally walked up to Matt Hughes and said that to him right after a victory. And that is, you know, that is a line that is being repeated till this day.
Well,
right?
He apologized for the mildest form of trash talk in the history of mixed martial arts.
Yes.
And he apologized for it.
Today's UFC is much different. One of the best things Dana White has ever done as a promoter, in my opinion, one of the greatest, like, it was a stroke of genius, was I remember him being in Montreal and saying that George St. Pierre was the most popular Canadian athlete on earth, meaning right. You go to anywhere on this planet and, you know, you give people a list of famous Canadian athletes. GSP is the most popular one, right? The one that everyone recognizes and knows.
This is a time when Mario Lemieux was still – I'm not sure if Gretzky was still around. Gretzky still around at the time?
He had retired. They had both retired, actually. But this created such a stir on Canadian sports talk radio. I remember like TSN, Sports, all of them were talking about it, saying how crazy GSP was. There were even people who said Bret Hart was a more popular Canadian and a more successful Canadian. I mean, there was – and it created such a debate – that I thought it was brilliant on Dana's part because it put GSP over and it put him into that conversation.
Right.
Right? It may not be true, and it probably – Gretzky is Gretzky, right? Lemieux is Lemieux, and I would even argue Bret Hart is Bret Hart. But that was such a smart move. So, you know, I talk about how the relationship clearly deteriorated. I thought that him doing that really put GSP in that stratosphere. And they did a great job back then to push him. Like, they put him in every opportunity possible, every big card possible to make him into a star. So I think the UFC deserves a lot of credit as to, like, when you talk about GSP's legacy and how popular he became.
Yeah, they promoted the hell out of him until things kind of deteriorated. But you're right. I remembered that. I remember thinking, even I was, as a fan of the sport, was like, was he crazy? And, you know, not even thinking about the fact this is Dana being a promoter. That's what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to build up his guys. But I remember thinking, this guy's insane. You know, that's the biggest piece of hogwash ever. But of course, what is talk radio all about? It's like somebody making some outlandish statement and then trying to support it and then somebody else trying to refute it. That's what makes for that debate.
Mm-hmm. Let's give a shout out to our, what does SIG stand for? Stats and Information Group. There's a G at the end, right? Thank you, Daniel. SIG Combat. So there's a Stats and Information Group here at ESPN. Here's some interesting stats as far as GSP goes. And just to prove just how great he was, he has the most wins in title fights in UFC history. That's 13. If, in fact, it is the end, which it will be the end come tomorrow, he would finish his career with 13 straight wins in overall fights, tied for the third longest streak in UFC history. How about this one? George St. Pierre won 12-0 in fights that went to a decision, tied for the most wins by decision in UFC history with Diego Sanchez, and by far the most wins from decision without a loss in UFC history, and that's also 12. The next closest would be Ryan Bader, who went 9-0 with decision victories. Most takedown landed in UFC history, 90, GSP number one. Number two is Gleison Tibau with 84, Demetrius Johnson 74. GSP is the only fighter in UFC welterweight history to have landed at least 1,000 significant strikes, according to UFC stats. In total, 1,254. Thiago Alves, by the way, has 999. Amazing. And here's one more for you. George St. Pierre lands 2.39 strikes per strike received, the best rate in UFC welterweight history, according to UFC stats. And that is number one. Kamaru Usman is 2.28, Dwayne Ludwig 2.02. So some stats for you if you want to understand just how great GSP was. I talked about the announcement that they were going to start that union, the MMAAA, alongside Cain Velasquez, Donald Cerrone, TJ Dillashaw, Bjorn Rebney. That thing lasted like 5 days, literally. But Greg, let me ask you, now that GSP is going to walk away, would you like to see him champion more of those causes? More drug testing, unions, revenue sharing, things like he's clearly well versed. He's clearly interested in that, but he was sort of knocked once he got back. He didn't push the issue anymore. Like, he had all this leverage, didn't push it. Would you like, now that he is going to be done, would you like to see him do that more? Do you think he will do that more?
I personally don't think he's going to do that more, but I think it would be a great idea. I mean, the fighters need people to back them up. I mean, you see, like, almost every week feels like somebody feels like they got screwed over in a shot or finances or anything like that. I mean, I do think to have a name like him, a all-time great backing this thing would be a great thing. I just don't know if it's in his personality and his future plans to actually go and keep pushing it.
Yeah, I wonder also if it's, you know, if he's going to walk away from the sport, then he can walk away from the sport. I mean, he's not, you don't see him on, you know, on the telecast like we see, you know, whatever, you know, Dominic Cruz and Daniel Cormier, and you can go down the list of all the fighters who have transitioned, even many of whom are still active, transitioned into the broadcasting. You don't see him in some of the other areas. I feel like that ship has kind of sailed for George, and he gave it his effort. He let people know what he thought the sport needed, and you know, look where we are. There's no, you know, the whole idea of a fighters union. I've kind of given up talking about that as well, because it's not in my interest. It's in the fighters' interest to have some kind of a union. And half the time we talk about, you know, fighters saying, you know, well, I really wish I had this, or wish the UFC would give me that. Well, hey, man, if you want the UFC to give you something, you better get it in writing. You shouldn't be asking them to give you something. And so there's a lot of reasons why the fighters need to be, you know, it's in the fighters' interest to do this. But, you know, I feel like George put out put his name behind it for a while. Now it's time for him to step away and do his own thing.
I wonder if he'll, again, like I said, he will always train, but he's at, you know, TriStar regularly. And kind of interesting that he posted a tweet yesterday with him and his longtime head coach Faraz Ahabi and said, after all these years, we remain undefeated. In hindsight, I think we know what he meant. At the time when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's just a nice photo between two old friends. But I wonder if he's more active there. There are some fighters that he has taken under his wing over the years, you know, like Francis Carmont. He would always be at his fights and whatnot. Were you guys at UFC 217, the one at MSG against Michael Bisping? Were you sitting cage side?
I was, yeah.
Do you remember him staying a little longer in the cage? I was watching from the back, but do you remember him staying longer to acknowledge the fans?
Yeah, I think he was there a little bit longer. I mean, yeah. I think we were in the middle of like writing and getting everything out there, but you could tell he was there and he was pretty emotional.
You remember that, Jeff? Were you there?
I remember the aftermath of it, where even though it took 2 weeks or so before he actually walked away from that belt, it seemed almost immediate. Like he had accomplished something, and you know, a lot of times when a person has Bruce Buffer yell out "and new," and a belt comes to somebody, it seems more like a beginning. But when this happened with George, it felt like there was some kind of closure happening. And I didn't, you know, certainly I didn't know at the time that he was going to retire and that he would never fight again. But it certainly seemed to me as though he had accomplished something, and now he was, you know, he was, if not riding off into the sunset, he was at least going to bask in his accomplishment and see what comes next.
Yeah. And of course, afterwards, he announced that he would, he was battling colitis because of the extra weight that he gained, and he was sick, and that's why he decided to walk away for a bit, although I don't think he ever had really any intentions of defending that title. But to the best of my knowledge, the colitis, the stomach issues, have nothing to do with his desire to walk away now. It's really the fact that he could not get that fight against Khabib Nurmagomedov. So he walks away as arguably the greatest fighter of all time, certainly the best welterweight champion of all time, with the win over Matt Hughes when he became champion at 65, of course. The greatest upset maybe of all time. He was on the receiving end of that. I still believe it's the greatest upset of all time. The Matt Serra win at 69.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. MMA, sure.
Avenged that at UFC 83, the first event in Canada, the first event at Montreal. The Bell Center was just absolutely deafening when he won that fight, and had many big fights in Montreal. The Koscheck fight at 124, the Condit fight, the Diaz fight, the Jake Shields fight. In Toronto, of course, the first champion versus champion fight in UFC history against BJ Penn at UFC 94. Just an unbelievable career. And I feel like we could talk about him for a very long time. But that announcement, again, is going to happen tomorrow, Thursday, 10:30 a.m., Bell Center. We will be there, so I'm excited about that. And my understanding is he'll also be honored at the Canadiens Flyers game later that night at the Bell Center as well. So congratulations to GSP on a phenomenal career, and I'm very curious to hear what he has to say. And I will admit I'm a little sad, because I do feel like this is the end of an era in this sport. There aren't a lot of GSPs left from that era that I think maybe attracted a lot of us to this sport. And, you know, certainly for me as a Canadian and as a Montrealer, it's a bittersweet moment. So I think he could be very active till this day. Like I think he could be a lot of fighters in the UFC. But hey, like Lennox Lewis, another great Canadian, by the way.
But that thinking that you said,
yeah,
is that's the problem that I think a lot of these guys think. I could still beat all these guys, and that's the problem, that
right.
they don't walk away. So I think that George is smart. He's done it twice now.
Yeah.
He's realized the first time that he was needed to step away, and he did it. Didn't say retire, but he needed to step away. Now he's prepared to actually say retire. And the fact that he didn't say before, but he's going to say it this time, I think this is it, and good for him.
And it's not just a fight game thing, right? I mean, it's sometimes – it's a thing that we kind of make fun of the fight game about, but like, let's be honest, it's a sports thing. Like, no one walks away on top. Michael Jordan couldn't do it, right? I mean, the greatest, like Willie Mays couldn't do it. Tom Brady is in the midst, could be one of those guys who could do it, but like, it's a very rare thing in sports
when
you're champion. That's why I think DC's not going to do it. You're doing so well, you're champion, you're making money to just walk away. Like, this is an incredibly impressive feat in its own right, right? It's not something he did in the cage. It's not athletic. But to walk away like this in sports, like I can't think of many guys who walked away, quote unquote, on top.
Yeah, I'm trying to think here who did that.
No, it doesn't happen. I mean, Rocky Marciano walked away from boxing undefeated. Floyd Mayweather walked away undefeated, but he keeps coming back and doing all kinds of weird things. And you know, he can't even he's not coming back to boxing, but he can't quite get something out of his system. He needs something. You know, in MMA, geez, I don't even know.
Yeah, some guys walked away. Like Chris Lytle walked away on a win, but he's come back to do bare knuckle fighting. I mean, even Kobe Bryant, like they didn't even make, or did they make the playoffs? I remember they lost that last game against the Utah or something like that. They did nothing in his final season, right? They were kind of, so the great.
Peyton Manning walked away after winning the Super Bowl.
Did he?
Yes.
Yes, with the Broncos.
Yes.
Is that correct, Daniel? That's correct.
Yes.
Okay, that's our resident NFL guru. Yeah,
but it's just so much different with MMA, though, I think, just because you're literally, people are trying to beat each other up in this mm-hmm. thing. And it's so strenuous on your body that, you know, you could keep going in the NBA. And, you know, it's obviously really tough to do that physically. But I just think MMA is different and you don't want to suffer potential brain damage and whatever else long term, you know, by keeping yourself going just for the sake of going.
Yeah. What a great fight that would have been, him versus Khabib, though.
Stylistically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who do you think wins that fight, Jeff?
Well, I guess it would depend on when it happened and what George looks like on the weigh-ins. I mean, think about it. You know, his last fight was 185 pounds. This is 155 pounds.
Yeah.
That's 30 pounds off of a guy who is, I mean, look, I can lose 30 pounds and you wouldn't even notice.
Sure.
But George is like lean and mean, and he's going to lose 30 pounds for the weigh-ins. If he came on the scale and looked, you know, pretty good, sort of, I mean, I actually thought TJ Dillashaw looked pretty good when he stepped on at 125 and looked what happened to him. So,
But he's going to put a lot of that back on.
Yeah, I
would have been down with 165, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
What do you think their weights would be when they step in the cage?
Well, it depends if it's a 155 fight or 165. Like, I actually was in favor of the 165 fight, not for a belt. Remember, Matt Hughes fought Hoyce Gracie at a catch weight, old guard versus new guard. That's the kind of fight that you don't need a belt for, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand they don't want to tie it up and Khabib's, you know, his time like is very valuable. You want him to defend the title, but I wouldn't have hated it. So if it would have been 165, I wouldn't be surprised if GSP walked in at like 185. Yeah. You know what I mean?
But to answer your question, I like to dance around and evade your questions usually when you ask me these tough ones, but I think that George has always had more tools than Khabib. I mean, Khabib, certainly, he knocked down Conor in that fight, but I don't. That was kind of a shocker. I don't think McGregor was expecting that that kind of thing. I think it would be prime GSP versus prime Khabib. I'm going with GSP. Where GSP is right now, I think it'd be a damn close fight. Who would I pick? I'd probably pick George.
Really?
I think I would.
He's more of a gentleman, so.
Yeah,
that's why.
No, I don't know. I mean, today I would pick George. I would go back
today,
and forth.
Like if this fight was happening in November, MSG.
I would pick George and then I would pick Khabib. I really think
what do you mean you'd pick George and then Khabib?
Because I would go back and forth constantly. I really would. Right now I'm saying George, but if we talk about this again like another week, I would be like the other way. It'd be
Greg?
Tough.
Yeah, it would be super interesting because like Conor, I mean, you knew he was just going to be able to get taken down.
Yeah.
You know, is GSP going to get taken down by?
I don't know.
Because that's the whole thing. Can he take him down and then beat him up in a ground-and-pound? That's what Khabib does. He mauls people.
The
so
hard,
I don't know. I mean, it's really tough.
Like, and who's striking is better? I think you'd have to give GSP the striking
GSP is
edge,
like
right?
significantly. Right. It's not even close.
Right.
And I think that Habib's wrestling maybe better, but it would be damn close. I mean, GSP, as you pointed out from our great stats and information group, he's had the most takedowns in UFC history. Yeah. I mean, of course, he's fought a lot of fights, but still. I mean, I think that GSP, Habib is in his prime. GSP would be a little beyond his prime, so that's a factor too that maybe would fall in Habib's on him. But man, it's hard to imagine. Yeah, I mean, I said George, I'll stick with it, but I swear, like tomorrow, I might like think I don't know. He never could beat Habib.
The audience can't see this, and by the way, I coincidentally am wearing my Montreal Expo sweatshirt, and this has nothing to do with GSP, but it does seem somewhat fitting. I'm actually salivating at the idea of these two fighting each other, just like us talking about it. Like, stylistically, it's one of the best fights, right? Because Habib is just so relentless. He's so dominating on the ground. And then, of course, with his takedowns, I don't know if he gets GSP to the ground. And I agree with you. His striking is better. GSP striking is better. Gosh, It's kind of a shame. But on the other hand, you know, like, I think it's unfair to the Fergusons of the world. So
yeah.
We talked about doing a story on this a while ago about the best fights that never actually came together.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this would be among that on that list.
Absolutely.
Of fights that were discussed
right.
and never put together, actually.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay, so that's tomorrow. We just have a few minutes left. We could do the whole episode on GSP, but some other breaking news yesterday, first reported by Brett Okamoto of ESPN, the UFC has decided to move ahead with the middleweight division, and they have booked an interim middleweight title fight between Israel Adesanya and Kelvin Gastelum. Right now, that fight is scheduled for April 13th. That is UFC 237. No. Six. Yes, six. Very mm-hmm. confusing.
Yeah.
Six. However, it doesn't have a location yet for whatever it's worth. I'm hearing Atlanta has been discussed. Houston has been discussed. Abu Dhabi was discussed, but once Khabib decided he would not fight, that was knocked off the table. MSG was discussed, but no longer in play from what I'm hearing. In any event, it's an interim title fight. We talked about this a couple weeks ago on the show, and we've been talking about it for the last couple weeks. Jeff, let me ask you first. Did the UFC get this one right with the pairing, with the booking? Now that we know that Whitaker is out for at least the next few months until maybe July, August, did they get it right with the pairing, and did they get it right with the interim title fight?
Well, you know how I despise interim title fights. But in this case, both of these guys were promised a championship fight. Gastelum was supposed to get the championship fight, and that got canceled. And Adesanya was put in that fight with Anderson Silva and said, if you beat Anderson Silva, you're going to get a title shot. So, in a sense, it's the UFC, paying off the debt to these guys. I know that the UFC often doesn't come through with the promises of that they have issued to their fighters, but in this case, they're giving these guys what they promised them they would get. In terms of the fight itself, I mean, it's the fight to make. I mean, what other fight is there to make? If you don't want to wait for Robert Whittaker, then you have to have these two guys fight. And it kind of solves another issue, which is, let's say you were deciding, well, we're just going to wait for Whittaker. Well, then which one of these guys do you give the fight to? Adesanya certainly was promised a title shot with his last win, but I would have given it to Gastelum if Whitaker was going to be defending his belt. I would put Gastelum back in there, and I think Adesanya would have screamed bloody murder. So the way you solve that is to put those two guys in there, and the winner fights against Whitaker.
I would agree, and I think I'm with you that interim title fights are really horrendous, and I hate when that is put together. That said, this seems like the perfect time to do it. I don't think Whitaker should be stripped because, I mean, he had a collapsed bowel and a hernia. Like,
every time someone says that, by the way, like, I cringe a little
like
bit.
He, that sounds awful. Like, I would never wish that on my worst enemy.
By the way, what about 2 weeks in a row? Collapsed bowel for Whitaker, collapsed lung for Paul Felder.
And how about Sergey Karatanov, a guy who trumps both of them?
Yes.
Yeah,
nailed in the groin. Groin.
If those three injuries were laid out in front of me, which one do I want?
I don't know, man.
I'm not going with Karatanov.
Find out tomorrow on ESPN.com. Yes, column.
That's a great one. That's a great one.
There's a poll for us. There's our next poll. That'll be on the
dot. Yeah, but Kharitonov doesn't require surgery of any kind.
No, but...
But he did get a hemorrhoid as a result.
That was not a pleasant experience by any means. Yeah. No, but
just going off of this, I would say just Whitaker should not be stripped. That wasn't in his control. It's not like he's refusing fights. The guy literally fought multiple rounds against Yoel Romero with like a broken hand.
Yeah.
So it's like it's not a bet based on toughness or anything like that. And I know Dana loves him too for all that. I do think this is probably the matchup to make. I would feel horrible for Kelvin Gastelum if just because of what happened to Whitaker, he was mere hours away from fighting for a title, and then just because Adesanya is the hot rising star that he gets passed over. I know our boy New York Rick thinks it should have been Adesanya over Gastelum. I'm with you, Jeff. I think Gastelum, just because he was ready to go, he should have gotten the shot, and you could always find something else for Adesanya if you didn't want to wait. This is the fight to make, though, I think, at this point. I was looking last night just to see who else can really have a shot. And at the top of the list, it's like who else besides these guys is deserving?
No,
I mean, Dockery split his last four. Weidman's lost four of five. Romero's lost two of three.
Yeah,
like this is the fight to make. And I think there's going to be some pressure on Adesanya just because he, like I said, he is this fast rising contender. And Gastelum, I think, has a lot to prove as well.
Are you worried that he's coming back too soon?
No, because it didn't seem like he took a lot of damage in the Anderson Silva fight.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And this guy's like wants to fight all the time. Right. Didn't he have some crazy number in terms of?
Although
kickboxing?
He did say after the fight that I want to take a little break. That I've just fought, you know, what was it, five times in a year, 365 days?
Yeah, in a year's space.
But you got to take the opportunity because now he's able to come in there, get the interim title, and that could set up this Whitaker fight that we've been talking about. That I think the UFC wants best.
Yeah, and you're right, Greg. You can't take the title away from Whitaker, even though he is. Never defended the belt that he won in 2017, but he was prepared to when Yoel missed weight last year. So even though he's had two fights where he's had a dropout, he weighed in, he was ready to go, and so you can't count that lack of a title defense against him because it wasn't his doing. So yeah, I think it'd be hard to take the belt.
And how about this nugget from Kelvin Gastelum yesterday? He won the Ultimate Fighter on April 13th of 2013. 6 years later to the day, he is going to fight, finally, hopefully, for a UFC title. So it's been a long road for him. Hopefully he's healthy. Adesanya remains healthy. And we'll finally get that fight, and then Whitaker comes back. Are you confused about something?
Was that the tough season against Uriah Hall?
Yes.
So he's, in a sense, he's... Another guy who's like really flashy, head kicky kind of thing. And I remember back then thinking, you know, this kind of like sort of meat and potatoes kind of basic wrestler guy, how's he going to fare against this flashy striker? Well, he just took him out of his game. And so the blueprint is out there, and we'll see whether he can do that against Adesanya, who, I didn't think was the guy that I don't think he should have leapfrogged. Gastelum. I mean, he did not defeat. He defeated a legend, but he did not defeat a top 10 fighter.
Anderson's 43 years old. He's not in his prime anymore. So, and I think it would have been different too if Israel went in there and knocked him out. I think there maybe would have been a little bit different discussion.
If he showed himself to be on a clearly different level,
right,
it'd be different. But when you fight a guy who's not a top 10 guy, and you know, I mean, look, Adesanya fought beautifully and won the fight clearly and all that, and he deserved the accolades that come with that. But I didn't think it was a performance that should have allowed him to leapfrog the guy who was sitting there waiting to fight for the title. So this is kind of the best solution you can come up with.
This is, again, as we said a couple weeks ago, this is when you really should institute an interim title for reasons like this. So they got it right. I know we all roll our eyes, but in this particular case, if you look at it in a vacuum, they got it right. Last quick thing before we go, we have like 2 minutes left. I'm still shocked that people are saying that Francis Ngannou didn't knock out Cain Velasquez. I don't feel like he's getting the credit that he deserves on this one. Am I crazy? I've watched this clip a million times now, and I don't understand how people don't see the fact that he hit him, and that led to his knee buckling. Like, I understand that his knee did a weird thing. Also, let's not ignore the fact that he walked out of the cage on his own, but like, it was his power and his punches that led to that. Is the MMA community not giving respect to Francis here?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to use a reference that's going to go over the heads of our young listeners, but it's a little bit of a Ali Sonny Liston kind of in this one, that where this almost like a phantom punch. I mean,
phantom punch.
From what I saw,
Jeff is in that group that didn't see the angle.
From what I saw, Ngannou
landed a very
short, either cross or uppercut, right hand,
yeah,
that on Cain, but it was thrown in such a, where the camera angle was basically behind Kane. So you almost didn't see what was – you could see Ngannou's arm move toward him, but you didn't really see – I didn't see the way it landed.
His head, like, shook.
Right.
Well, that's what I was going to say, too, which is I think the angle that people were watching live, it wasn't a great view.
Okay.
But there's been a million angles since. Right. But there's been all these angles since. Right. Jeff still doesn't think it.
No, I didn't expect.
I can't believe I'm bringing this up at the last minute.
You can see it in the other angle.
No, I'm saying that when you're watching the thing live, you're like, what just happened
there?
That's the fandom part of it.
He
hit him. I mean, and I don't think he necessarily was knocking him out with that punch. I think he wobbled him enough and the knee buckled as he wobbled, and that was the end of it. I mean, I think if, let's say his knee was fine. It might have shook him up a little bit, and who knows what would have happened right after that. But once he hit him enough to make the knee make him wobble. The wobbling body made the knee buckle, and then it's over. So
no respect from Jeff Wagenheim.
No respect. So you're on my side here, Greg.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, he has crazy power.
Yes,
and even a short shot like that will send somebody
to
the ground.
Yeah. Now, okay, so if you're the UFC, you're Francis. What do you do next with him?
Well, I think Cormier is still waiting for Brock.
Yeah,
and that's the fight to make. And am I crazy to say he should get a rematch with Stipe?
I'm down.
That's what I think it should be, you know? And then the winner could potentially face DC wants to do that, or if DC wants to face Jones next. But I think the Stipe fight is the best one to make right now. I was at that one. You were there too.
Yeah.
Were you there?
Yeah.
Like, all three of us there. Like, it was, like you said, the first round was amazing.
Yeah.
It was crazy build up.
Yeah.
The rest of the fight wasn't amazing because Stipe just did what he usually does. I'm very curious, and this is what I was thinking when I watched the fight the other night. It ended, whatever it is, 26 seconds in. We didn't truly get to see how much Francis really grew.
Right.
Because we all know he has crazy power, and he showed that. You know, so does he have better takedown defense? Is he a better wrestler than he was when he faced Stipe? That's what I'm curious about, if that rematch comes together.
All right, we'll put a pin on this because we are out of time. I know we spent a lot of time talking about George today, but I think it was...
Au revoir, George.
Au revoir, yes. Well done.
Are you going to go back to his hometown and remember
that'd be a good story.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it afterwards. We have a lot more to discuss as far as what happened last week and what's to come and all that stuff and more. But for now, we're out of time, so we'll talk about it on a future episode or two of the MMA Reporters. Appreciate you guys doing this. You know, like I said, breaking news is always fun. You don't have a lot of time to, like, really digest everything. It's just all very raw.
Mm-hmm.
And I was crying throughout, but no one saw that. So I'm happy that this was just audio. Again, thank you very much, Greg. Thank you very much, Jeff. Thank you very much, Daniel. Appreciate everyone who listens, who downloads, who rates, who comments, all that stuff and more. Enjoy your Wednesday. Tomorrow, coverage from Montreal, ESPN's big announcement. We are out of time. Enjoy your weekend. By the way, UFC Prague this weekend, ESPN2 and ESPN Plus Bellator in Dublin. So a lot more to discuss next week. We'll see you then.